Welcome to Capitalist Pigs, where every week we bring you what's hot in business, the markets, and your money. My name is Chris Butler, portfolio manager with Butler Lands and Wagler, and Capitalist Pigs, produced every week by Mr. Martell Love. And this show is sponsored by Butler Lands and Wagler. Please feel free to send us an email today with your thoughts, opinions, or questions, and you can do that by going to the show's website, thecapitalistpigs.com. Again, thecapitalistpigs.com. Check out the charts we have posted for you this week while you're there. Good morning, Mr. Martell Love.
Good morning, Chris Butler, and happy Memorial Day weekend to you.
Happy Memorial Day to you and yours. It kicks off, I guess, right about now, right?
Right about now. This is it.
This is it.
We made it.
We did make it. And, you know, it's not funny, actually. I feel for you. Your production booth is like 80 degrees.
Yes.
On, what is it, the 27th of May.
Right, right.
I've got cool airflow in the recording part of the studio. What's going on with that?
It's just a part of hell. That's all.
You are being punished for something you did not do. Yeah, that's.
I did nothing, Chris.
No, and you are being punished. You know, I don't know what the temperatures are supposed to be the rest of this Memorial Day, but something tells me that it's not going to be any hotter than it is in the production booth.
Right. Seriously.
I mean, that's
go outside,
right? Unbelievable. You know, I actually had a complained in my own building about hot temperatures in late May in that building. They told me they actually look at the weather forecast, and that determines how they set the thermostats throughout the course of a day. So it's probably the same thing in this building.
That could be pretty cool, actually. I mean, that sounds efficient, right?
It does, yeah. Except they clearly got something wrong.
Right, well, yeah.
In your part of the same room. That's what's so weird. It's the same room, it's just separated by glass. Your part of it is just absolutely unbearably hot.
It's a sauna. I think they're trying to give me a sign.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah, right. Sweat it out.
Sweat it out.
Sweat it out this weekend. All right. I guess, Martell, and I listened to a few segments of Greg's show, your show on throughout the course of the week. Did you guys talk much about Donald Trump and his I guess you'd call it a speech at the NATO building?
Yes, we did. Yes,
did you? What was the bottom line on that for you guys? What did you think of this speech?
Well, Greg was just surprised that not surprised, but he was glad that he said the things that he said in front of them.
Yeah, but couldn't you have done that also in private?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I mean, this guy is something else. I mean, we are not going to be lacking for things to talk about with Donald Trump as president.
He is the gift that keeps on giving.
He is, I tell you. And you know, last week we did played an interview on this show that was recorded earlier this year. So I didn't get a chance really to talk about the nosedive that the stock market took the week before when it looked like the odds of impeaching the Donald were rising fast. Of course, the stock market has recovered all of that, so it wasn't a big deal. So had I talked about it, I probably would have looked silly because it took approximately 4 days to retrace everything that was lost. Big story this week. And it really is interesting to me. It's starting to become the rule rather than the exception that things coming out of Washington, D.C. will affect markets dramatically. Things coming out of the world political stage, like an election in France or Brexit, those things are starting to have a big effect or impact on markets, even here in the United States. I guess we shouldn't be surprised that the things that OPEC says are also going to move markets, although that's a bit more related to the economy. I think you have to say that the biggest story this week was Thursday's drop in oil prices, which overnight on Wednesday hit $52 per barrel, and that was a several-month high. And it got as low, well, I guess you'd call that on Thursday morning, it got as low as $48 and 42 cents. So from the top of the range to the bottom of the range, oil dropped almost 7% in one day. And that is volatility. Now, you might be wondering, well, why was that? Well, that's because OPEC met on Thursday and announced, by the time you awoke probably, that of the three options to be voted on, a three-month extension of the existing production cuts, a six-month extension of those cuts, or a 12-month extension of those cuts, they chose, as expected, the six-month extension. Now, I have no idea what oil traders are thinking. I have no idea what they were thinking in the weeks leading up to Thursday, where they took oil from less than $44 a barrel all the way to 52 for almost 20% gain in about 1 month. Oil was up 20% in about 1 month. But it's safe to say that OPEC unexpectedly failed to deliver the expected upside surprise of a 12-month extension. If you followed that logic, you're the only one. I don't really know how to go about figuring that out, but that appears to be what was behind oil price movements on Thursday. And I'll talk more about the oil market later in the show. But for now, suffice it to say that in 6 months, OPEC can still extend the cuts another 6 months, you know. Still, here's what you need to know about oil. There's a glut of it. There are still super tankers parked around the world's shipping lanes, full to the brim of oil and sitting there unsold, as they have been for almost 2 years now. There's a glut. We keep hearing about how the oil market is expected to balance, meaning supply and demand come together, in the second half of this year. Or we hear that the oil market is supposed to be balanced by the first quarter of 2018. Or, I mean, all sorts of projections along those lines. All I can say is this. No, it won't. Not if the U.S. drillers keep drilling like they have been. Not in 2017 will that market balance. Not in 2018 will that market balance. Apparently, it's going to take another big drop in the price of oil for U.S. drillers to back off the pace at which they're drilling. And, you know, I haven't really thought about it much, but it just kind of dawned on me that if you're familiar with an economics problem called a tragedy of the commons, it might be what we're looking at here, meaning no one is incented really to stop producing. And you have every incentive to be the guy, or in this case, the nation, that drills the most of a precious resource that has a limit to it. It's called the tragedy of the commons. It just kind of dawned on me that might be one way to describe what's going on in the oil market. I didn't have a chance to talk about that market drop last week related to some things that Trump might or might not have said to Russian diplomats. Apparently, he is being accused of giving away the farm to Russians. But I think it's safe to say at this point the market doesn't care. By the way, last week with the interview, Mike Terwilliger of Resource Credit Fund, I think that guy has about as sharp a mind in fixed income as there is. So I hope you enjoyed that. Then there's this Bitcoin story. You know, actually, before I touch on that, let me preview what we're going to talk about regarding stocks as well later in the show. I have to tell you that there is something about this market that is more than just a little unsettling. It seems so top heavy. It reminds me of that puzzle game. Martell, have you ever played a game called Jenga?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Jenga.
I do, too. And it seems like the stock market is Jenga. After about 15 rounds of one-piece removals, and if you've played the game, you know what I'm talking about. You take out 15 pieces of the Jenga, and suddenly it's the turn of some guy with a shaky hand disorder wanting to take a piece out of the bottom, right? I mean, that's kind of what the stock market is feeling like.
And it all comes crashing down.
And then it all comes crashing down because you're destabilizing it. Each person that takes a piece of the Jenga is adding to the destabilization of the entire pile of little wood pieces. Then there's this Bitcoin thing, which Yeah, I wanted to get to that, and we'll talk more about the stock market later, but it's a nice segue into another such Jenga puzzle. It's called Bitcoin. Bitcoin mania is back in a big way, thanks in large part to the Asian obsession with gold and Bitcoins. Since April 26th, and you're not going to believe me when I say this, but I have a chart. Since April 26th of this year, a month ago, Bitcoin is up 270%. Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency, is up 270% in a month. Yeah, that's normal. Things that can go up 270% in 4 weeks can then lose 80% in about two. So this thing is very volatile, very top heavy. You need to take a look at the chart. When things go that parabolic, as Bitcoin has,
how does that happen?
It is just another bubble. I was thinking about this on the way to the studio today. You know, why does that happen? Well, I think it's because there is so much money sloshing around the globe right now because we've printed so much of it, not just the U.S., but every developed nation anyway, that it has to go somewhere. Where does it go? It goes into Bitcoin. Okay. Now, Martell, have you heard of Bitcoin?
Not really. I know of the term.
Yeah, you've heard the term, yeah. but most people do not know what it is, and you should not feel alone if that describes you. It is strange, and it has just come onto the scene fast and hard, probably over the past 2 years more than anything else. So let me try to explain Bitcoin, but you know what? We're running out of time for this segment. Let's wait and get into this 270% gain in a cryptocurrency called Bitcoin. You're listening to Capitalist Pigs, KCMO Talk Radio 710 and 103.7 FM as well. Welcome back to Capitalist Pigs, where every week we try to bring order to an otherwise chaotic world of economics, finance, and investment. You can join the endeavor by sending us an email. You do that by going to the show's website, thecapitalistpigs.com. My name is Chris Butler, portfolio manager with Butler Lands and Wagler. We're going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin. But before we do, I wanted to mention to producer Martell Love that not only do I want that whole song to play and me just shut up, but I am sure 80% of the people listening are wishing for the same.
I actually was just over here dancing in my seat. Yeah, so I didn't want it to end
you
either.
You cannot stop. Get a little Bee Gees. Feel the night fever, man.
I love it.
Feel the night fever. Yeah, Bee Gees.
I'm sure feeling the night fever on this Memorial Day weekend.
I am too. We should have shown up this morning, Martell, wearing leisure suits.
Yes.
Big gold chains.
Yes, and bell bottoms.
Bell bottoms, getting our groove on. We'll do it next week. But this is a party weekend. This is Memorial Day, and I hope you're having a good one in these early stages of the Memorial Day weekend. Hope it's a safe one as well. Yeah, always can do us some Bee Gees. All right, let's talk about Bitcoin. Now, I was asking Martell before we cut to break if he had heard of Bitcoin. I think most people have heard the word Bitcoin.
Yes, but Chris, for the average man like me, just break it down for me. What is it? What does it mean?
You know, and by the way, I think even people that trade Bitcoin don't know what Bitcoin is. But it's a cryptocurrency, and a cryptocurrency is a digital currency in which encryption techniques are used to regulate the generation of the units of this currency, and that encryption is also used to verify the transfer of funds. So it operates completely independently of a central bank. It's a currency only as long as it's accepted as payment. In other words, if you go online and you want to buy a book, let's say it's Amazon or some kind of used bookseller, they might take Visa, MasterCard, and Bitcoin. I don't think many of them do right now, but they could, in which case you'd have to buy some Bitcoin if you wanted to pay with Bitcoins, and then you'd transfer it safely, encrypted in an encrypted way. So in that sense, it's safer than maybe using your credit card. But here is the problem with Bitcoin, and I totally like the idea, but you hear people say that Bitcoin is money. And no, it's not money. It is a currency, but it is not money. Now, let me explain. Here's why Bitcoin is not money. Bitcoin can function as a currency only as long as individuals know that they can convert it into fiat money, dollars, or cash on demand. Bitcoin, in and of itself, has no value. Only as a currency does it have value, and that value is derived by its convertibility into actual money. Therefore, it is not money on its own. It is a currency. Now, why is that important? Because I think a lot of people buying Bitcoin think that eventually Bitcoin is going to be money, and it will be the only money that anybody uses. It will take the place of fiat currency. Fiat currency is what we use, and well, everyone uses. And it's they say fiat because it is money by dictate. Somebody actually said, this is money and you will use it. Now, in the United States, one of the reasons that our dollar bills actually have value is because the IRS, the Treasury Department, says you will pay your taxes in these green pieces of paper. You cannot pay them in Bitcoin. You can't pay them in euros or gold. You have to use this currency. That gives our currency value, whatever value that it has. Right now, Bitcoin is pure speculation. I do like what it's trying to do. It's trying to circumvent the need for a central bank or a monetary authority. Plus, unless I'm mistaken, there are a limited number of these Bitcoins. And I want to say it's like 21 billion or something. It's 21 something. They are set. They will not produce any more, or at least that's my understanding, but that gives it value. And I think that's great. But I found this quote on the internet. Quote, decentralized cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin now provide an outlet for personal wealth that is beyond restriction and confiscation, end quote. Wow. That is an extremely naive view. Are you kidding me? Beyond restriction and confiscation? May I suggest a book on monetary history for you? Money has always been restricted and confiscated, and there's nothing about Bitcoin that would change that. Really, though, the only short-term problem with Bitcoin is the risk of hacking and cybercrime, and I'm no expert on this, but it does seem to me that if hackers can get into our government's computers, they can steal or destroy your Bitcoins. Now, again, I'm not an expert, but there's at least that potential that gives it some risk. The bottom line is that Bitcoin is an extremely volatile, speculative currency right now. If you want exposure to Bitcoin, just understand the risks and also understand what it is. Because I don't think, and this is my opinion, when I say it's not money, I mean, you get economists bickering over what is money all the time. So when I say that it's not money, that I consider that to be a risk, because I think a lot of people buying Bitcoin think that it is, but its value is derived by its convertibility into money. It is not money by itself. That means its longer-term prospects are probably limited. But long-term, I do think there is something to cryptocurrencies. Since supply is restricted, unlike our own fiat currency, where we print those things up every time the market sneezes, there is some promise in cryptocurrencies, and I do find that the idea is compelling. Okay, now, why the 270% move this month? I think it has a lot to do with, well, it's all but proven that the buying is coming from Asia. Okay, so it is always Asia, it seems, that wants to set the value of safe haven assets like gold, like Bitcoin. These are people that are really looking for safety. They're much more conservative financially, I think, than the rest of the world in Asia, or that's been their history. And so they find things like gold and Bitcoin more appealing, maybe, than the Western world would. So I think it is coming from Asia. I think it's the fact that their economy in China and their stock market in China and other parts of Asia aren't doing very well that has led to folks wanting to get some protection. And so they're going into things like gold and Bitcoin. So I think it's an interesting topic, cryptocurrencies, and maybe at some point here we'll get into them a little bit more because Bitcoin is not the only cryptocurrency available to you. It is, however, the only one that's up 270% in 1 month. All right, before we take a break here, let me talk about one economic release that we got, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index. And we don't normally talk about the Chicago Fed's NAI, but given the weakness in the economic data so far in 2017, I thought this was an interesting result. The CFNAI, as it's called, is a monthly index that tracks overall economic activity. It actually looks at 85 different monthly indicators of economic activity, and they're weighted and they're put into this index. And it's constructed to have a mean value of zero and a standard deviation of one. Not to get too statistical on you, but in April, we got a number of 0.49. What that means is that our economy is about one half of a standard deviation higher than its trend. And that's a good thing. That's a real good thing, actually. And in an absolute sense, 0.49, pretty good. Also, in a relative sense, this was the highest reading on our economy, save for 2 months in the last 48. We need to take a break. When we get back, we'll continue talking about the markets and the economy. You're listening to Capitalist Pigs, KCMO Talk Radio 710 and 103.7 FM. Welcome back to Capitalist Pigs, where every week we engage you in thoughtful discourse about our economy and our markets. You can join the fun by sending us an email. You can do that by going to the show's website, thecapitalistpigs.com, where we've also got some charts posted for your perusal. Again, the website, thecapitalistpigs.com. My name is Chris Butler, portfolio manager with Butler, Lands & Wagler. Show is produced by Martel Love. Background music provided by Hall & Oates, if I'm not mistaken. Is that Hall & Oates?
That's right.
It is Hall & Oates. Very nice. Happy Memorial Day to you all. I hope that it is a fun and safe one for you. We're just getting it kicked off here on Saturday morning. You got three days here to relax and spend some time with your family and friends and remember those who have died in service of their country. I am certainly thankful and will remember. All right, last segment, we finished by talking about the Chicago Fed National Activity Index, which was a pretty strong reading. Actually, only 2 months in the prior 48 have been higher, and they weren't higher by much. This is kind of like the top end. You can get a couple of months in this range, and you're going to be sitting pretty economically. Unfortunately, there's not much more good economic news to serve to you this Saturday morning. A couple of real estate indicators came out, new home sales, existing home sales. Keep in mind, before we talk about these, that all real estate data is extremely volatile. And March, we're coming off of March that was the best month in 6 years for new home sales. So if you consider that March was the best month in 6 years, it shouldn't be too worrisome to find out that April was absolutely terrible. New home sales came in at a rate that's the worst in the last 4 months, and it was a stinker, and you can't paint this picture any better. It was a stinker. But if you get the best month in 6 years, I think it's okay to take the worst month in, or the worst number in 4 months. That balances out in our favor. And because it's so volatile, that's why we want to take a look at the three-month average. That's a better indicator of the trend. And the trend in new home sales is still up. In fact, that uptrend is pretty strong. Sales slowed in April, even as builders cut prices, where the median price fell 3% in the month to around $310,000, roughly. $310,000 is the median new home price, and that is still near cycle highs. Now, existing home sales, on the other hand, not nearly as strong over the past several months as new home sales, but they in April fell 2.3%. That's also bad, but unfortunately, existing home sales have been weak for a while. The growth rate, in fact, annual growth rate, is below 2% on existing home sales. The median price rose 3.5% to about $245,000. That's the median home, median priced home, for a 6% annual growth rate. And that looks pretty rich relative to sales. Supply, which had been very depressed, was positive in April. In fact, there was a 7.2% increase in supply in the month of April. By the way, supply was up in new home sales, the new home market also. Now, sometimes I look at the Future Home Price Index, something produced by the Economic Cycle Research Institute, just to see what to expect over the coming year. I thought I'd pass this on to you. That index is now down 2% annually. The growth rate is a minus 2%, and this is trying to forecast home prices 1 year out. So what does that tell us? Well, it suggests that prices of homes, while high right now, it's clearly a seller's market, by the way, but that might change here over the next few months. Prices may soften. You know, I think everybody here knows somebody that over the past 6 months to a year has sold their house, and the house was on the market for, like, you know, a day or 2 days and sold at asking or above. I have heard many of those stories. So the house market here in Kansas City, very strong. It is a seller's market. However, it does look, if we are to believe the leading home price index, that home prices may soften a little bit here over the next several months. So if you're a buyer, that's good news. The Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index tells us how healthy manufacturing is in the Kansas City Federal Reserve region. So this is actually a lot bigger than just the Kansas City metro. But you might be thinking, why care that much about manufacturing in the Kansas City region? It's because if you don't have a sector that makes things, then you're not likely to have a very strong or big sector that is service-oriented, serving, in essence, the people that are making things. So it is important to look at our region's manufacturing health. This, the Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index, produced by the Kansas City Federal Reserve, is a diffusion index, so any positive number is good, and that reflects growth, and any negative number that's bad indicates contraction in the manufacturing sector here. We came in at a plus 8, and that is solid, very solid. Keep in mind, though, that this index got as high as 20 a few months ago, and that's like, now you're talking top 10% readings of all time. That's very strong. The report's internals this month showed pretty much steady strength across all the components, including new orders, which is, as you know, if you listen to the show, I think that's a big leading indicator, tells us what's going to happen. We did see an increase in new orders here in Kansas City. Backlog orders registered a reading of 12. That's good, and that points to a need for hiring, which at an index reading of 11 is already pretty strong. So it looks like over the next 3 months, we should see some economic strength here in the Kansas City Federal Reserve District. Then on Friday, we got the durable goods new orders numbers in. And durable goods new orders, first of all, what's a durable good? That's a good that's durable. Nah, it is a good that has an expected life of 3 years or longer. And obviously, there are consumer durable goods like washing machines, and then there are commercial durable goods. That would be like a machine that is used in the construction of other things. And that, by the way, if you're making tools, that's considered a capital good. And capital goods, by the way, are a big part of this report. And you cannot have a growing economy unless you are increasing the number of things that make things. Capital goods. This was the durable goods new orders reading that came out on Friday morning was disappointing. I think maybe more so than was warranted. But it's pointing, if we're going to take it at face value, it's pointing to a lot less of a rebound in GDP in the second quarter than we got in the first quarter and what everyone is expecting. But it is just 1 month of that quarter, second quarter. It is just April. Overall, I think this report was a little weak, but maybe not as weak as most people thought, at least when the headlines came flashing across at 7:30 our time. New orders for April were expected to be down 1% and were thought to have been up 0.7% in March. Now, as it turns out, the headline shows we were only down 0.7% versus a minus 1 expected. And March was revised up to a gain of 2.3%. Now, net-net, that's good. Had we only been up 0.7% in March, as we previously thought, and then down 1% as we were expecting, we would have had a two-month net effect of a drop of about 0.33%. Okay, but this minus 0.7% headline that we got in for April on Friday morning needs to be taken in context. Because March was revised higher, the net effect for 2 months, March and April, was actually a gain of 1.6%, not a drop of a third, as had been expected. And yet, markets sold off on this news. You have to pay attention to the math. Most people just look, and I think this includes market participants, just look at that headline. New orders down 0.7% in April. Yeah, but March was revised so far up that we're still coming out ahead. Certainly ahead of what was expected. Now, the same is true of core new orders. That's when you strip out transportation orders because they're so sporadic. It's hard to see a trend when you include them. So you strip them out just to see a trend. The two-month expectation was for a meager 0.2% gain. But we got a two-month return of twice that thanks to, again, another big revision to the March number. But the headline shows that core new orders were down 0.4% in April. But that huge upward revision to March makes us off a little better once we do the math. Again, I don't think algorithms that trade securities are programmed really to go back and do all of this math. I mean, it is saying sell, basically. But the all-important core capital goods number, the leading economic indicator in this report, was every bit as bad as its headline, which was 0%. It wasn't negative, but it was much less than expectations. And more importantly, it wasn't positive. And this is the number that tracks how many people are ordering or how many orders there are for goods that make other goods. Without this number going up, it is hard to imagine an economy that's growing. It's almost impossible to imagine one that's growing sustainably over time. This needs to go up. And this is the most important number in the report. But overall, markets thought this was a bad report. I didn't think it was that bad. It just wasn't very good. And then finally, on Friday morning, we got our first revision to first quarter GDP. If you recall, this was an embarrassingly low number when we first got it in late March. In the first quarter, our economy was growing, we thought, at an annualized rate of 0.7% when we're looking for 3% and 4%. Well, this was revised this week. That 0.7 number was revised to an annual growth rate of 1.2%. Which you might think is still bad, and it is, but it's certainly a lot better than what we thought. Now, why the upward and surprising revision? Well, as it turns out, upon further review, people did actually consume some things in the first quarter. In fact, they consumed a lot more than was previously thought. So consumption, which is about 65-66% of GDP, went up, and it went up a lot, and that helped push this number up. So never count out the American consumer, because even when they don't have money, they're going to consume. They're just going to go into debt to do it. And that is what we did in the first quarter. We actually consumed a lot more than previously thought. We need to take a break right now. We get back, we will take a look at the markets. You're listening to Capitalist Pigs, KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM and 103.7 FM. Welcome back to Capitalist Pigs, where every week we try to make a little bit of sense out of the seemingly nonsensical worlds of money and investments. You can join the party, and is now officially a party, by sending us an email. Just go to the website, thecapitalistpigs.com. Check out the charts we've got posted for you while you were there. My name is Chris Butler, portfolio manager with Butler Lands and Wagler. Martel Love is spinning the tunes, and it is Memorial Day weekend, where we honor on Monday those service people that gave the ultimate sacrifice. We remember them and we're thankful for them. So have a good, restful, enjoyable, I guess you'd call it a 3-day. It is. It's a 3-day holiday, but especially on Memorial Day. Spend that time with family and friends. Have a good time if you can, if you're not working. We're going to continue talking about the markets and your money here. We're going to start by looking at the dollar. Now, we talked about, I guess, in the second segment, mainly Bitcoin and the 270% increase in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a competitor right now to the U.S. dollar, or so it's thought. And the dollar has been weak, and that is one of the reasons. It certainly doesn't explain 270% gains made in Bitcoin over the month, but the dollar has been weak. And it's been weak because of weakness in the U.S. economy. We haven't gotten very many good or surprisingly good economic reports over the past, well, now going on 4 months, probably. I think you do have to go back to January to get the last sniff of some strength economically. The dollar was up marginally this week, but it's been hammered in May. From the 11th of May to the 22nd, the dollar gave up just shy of 3%, and that's been because there's been absolutely no sign of life from this economy over the last 3 or 4 months now. Bonds, the same lack of strength coming from recent economic reports is affecting bonds also. Bond yields have dropped just a fraction this week, but they've been dropping more than that. On May 11th, the 10-year Treasury yield was at 2.42. It's now at 2.24. That means bond prices are up in that same time frame. There is just not any inflation fear out there and inflation expectations. And by the way, inflation is the arch nemesis of bonds. When there's a lot of inflation, bond prices go down. When there's very little, they go up. And right now, you're starting to see kind of a pullback in the gains made in inflation expectations. I do have a chart that shows this. Inflation expectations peaked January 27th and hit a low April 17th. And although expectations have increased a little since then, it just hasn't been by much. It's inflation expectations that drive interest rates. If there's not this fear of inflation, yields are going to fall and prices of bonds are going to move up, and that's exactly what's been going on. I will say this, though. When you look at that chart of inflation expectations, you would think, judging from some of the moves in bond prices and bond yields, that there is absolutely not a hint of expectation of inflation in the future. That is not the case. Those expectations have pulled back, but not that much. So check out that chart. The future inflation gauge, a leading indicator of inflation, measures all sorts of inflation pressures before they're actually realized in higher prices. That index has not changed much in about a year. I've got a chart of that. That means future inflation is likely to be higher than it's been, but not by much. You did see this dramatic repricing of inflationary risk, and then nothing for about a year. So let's move on to commodities, and let's talk about oil. Supply is at a 15-week low as inventory has been getting taken down, but I do expect that to change. We're now drilling at a rate only eclipsed by about a three-month period of time in 2015. Otherwise, we're all-time highs in production of oil here in the U.S. The number of rigs in operation is up 20% over the last year. That's adding to production and supply. Demand for oil hasn't changed much in about 3 years. We've been between 19 and 20 million barrels for 3 years now. We're at 20 as we speak. My guess is that if oil can close above $50 for a couple of weeks, you're going to see inventory start to build again because we're going to increase production again. So over the last year, supply has been growing and demand is the same. Let me say that again. Supply is going up. Demand has been constant, unchanged. What should oil prices have done? Well, oil prices, by following the laws of economics, should have come down, but actually they're up a little over that time frame. Why? Hope. There is or has been the hope that OPEC stops producing oil. I guess altogether. I guess there is the hope that OPEC just stops their mission. They get out of the oil game altogether. Well, good luck with that. That's not going to happen. They may reduce production as they have, or we're being told that they're going to, but that's not going to do. It's not going to support prices based on hope. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to see production in the Middle East drop that much. All right, stocks. I've got a chart posted that I think is well worth looking at. One of the biggest diversions that you're going to see in the stock market, you're seeing breadth. That is how many stocks are going up or meeting. In this case, I'm looking at how many stocks are in an uptrend. As the market itself has gone up, breadth has gone down. That's never good. Money is flowing progressively into fewer industries and stocks. In fact, if your name is not Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, or Google, you're probably not at all-time highs. In fact, I'd say you're probably well off your all-time highs. But the market is making all-time highs. And it looks like we're out of time for today. And again, I want to wish everybody a great three-day weekend if you've got it. Enjoy your Memorial Day in a safe way. Stay tuned for Don Wales, Protecting Your Retirement. That comes up next. And this show is sponsored by Butler, Lands, and Wagler. I want to thank you for listening to Capitalist Pigs. I want to thank Martell Love for producing. And until next Saturday, have a great week. Money, 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 money.